Hey team, it's Matt Drinka on here. And you might have heard, my brand new book releases on Amazon on March 8th. It's been a labor of love that I think can really help you navigate some of the challenges you're experiencing in your own life. I go over toxic positivity and how to think you're in it for everyone else. In reality, you're in it for yourself. And I express that through this entire book and help learn from our own mistakes and how to turn the lens on ourselves and ask good questions. So go to Amazon on March 8th, and you can get the Kindle version for only 99 cents. Just search for the book title, The Eternal Optimist, It's Never Too Late, and you can download it directly to your device. That's it for me. Let's get into today's episode. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host of the Eternal Optimist podcast, Matt Drinkon speaking. Thanks for tuning in today. Today we have a special guest episode that I wanted to share. It's where I appeared on a podcast, Profit is a Choice. And the amazing hostess, Michelle Williams, she had me on the show and how to be eternally optimistic about your finances is the topic. All right, so if you're listening in today, this is a special guest episode where I am on another podcast and tune in to listen to some ideas on being eternally optimistic about your finances. Thanks so much for tuning in today, and I hope you enjoy, team.
Hello, my name is Michelle, and you're listening to Profit is a Choice. Joining me today is Matt Drinkon of the Eternal Optimist podcast and Pro Coach Advisors. Matt is full of information and enthusiasm and excitement about understanding our numbers, especially having that financial literacy. And Matt's going to share a little bit about his journey and some of his embarrassment at not knowing numbers, yet then harnessing the power behind those numbers to scale and to grow businesses. And so just a fun, enjoyable conversation. And I invite you to listen in and take notes. Every day, empowered entrepreneurs are taking ownership of their company financial health and enjoying the rewards of reduced stress and more creativity. With my background as a financial software developer, owner of multiple businesses in the interior design industry, educator, and speaker, I coach women in the interior design industry to increase their profits, regain ownership of their bottom line, and to have fun again in their business. Welcome to Profit is a Choice. Hey, Matt, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Michelle. Love to be here today and ready to talk about financial literacy. Ooh, what a fun, scary topic for many. Excited to talk about it. So thank you.
I know. It's so fun. But Matt, before we jump into that, I would love to hear a little bit about your business journey. You've had a very, I'm going to say it this way, a very varied journey, right? You've done a lot of different things. So why don't you share with our listeners a little bit about what's brought you to do what you're doing today?
Oh, thank you. Well, I'll start by saying this, that when I first got started in business, I did not know if I could sell anything. I did not know if I could lead people. I kind of felt that I probably could, but I didn't know. And I got my first real job out of college selling Cutco knives. And then that led.
I have Cutco knives.
You do?
I have them. Best knives ever. My husband and I were just, we've had them.
Still the best knives.
27 years. And we still keep buying additional knives to go with it. Like they are the best knives ever. Just saying.
Completely agree. Yes. And they also have a great training program for college students. When I joined, I was in college and ended up running an office and then a few offices and had a couple thousand salespeople. So I was able to learn a whole lot about interviewing and hiring and training and sales and development and all that. So that was millions of dollars of Cutco sales. And then I decided, let's go and play pro golf because that's what my dad wanted. I read his diary after he untimely passed. And actually this week in 2023, the day after Memorial Day here in the US is the 18-year anniversary of his passing.
Wow, I'm sorry.
So sorry for that too. And it's led to some amazing things. One of those was his diary said, well, his only regret in life is that he wished he could have caddied for me in the pro golf tour. So I hung up the business and decided to go try to play pro golf for 30 months and I did not earn a single penny and did not do anything what you would call successfully there. So then I went back to corporate America, and in that corporate space with two companies over 6 years, I learned an incredible amount working for other people. And in those two enterprise, like Fortune 50, one of them was one of the biggest companies in the world, was able to learn how to do B2B on a high level and manage and motivate corporate employees, not my employees, mind you, corporate employees and teammates. And through all of that, it then led me to the age of about 36 in 2014 when I made the jump into coaching. And now, bullet point, business coach. What I really do is I help the people that are perfectionists, who are recovering from that, who are control freaks like me. And I say that lovingly and respectfully, who want to have everything under their thumb. They want to know all of the things. They want to make all the decisions. And they're the bottleneck and the challenge in their business. So I help people that are the bottleneck in their business make it so they can scale it and do it in a simple way. And that's what I've been doing for the past 9 years. So we're in year 10 of business. And you know, our company, Pro Advisor Coach, you know, there's maybe 150-ish coaches around the world with Pro Advisor Coach. And I'm the person who's been here the second longest. So excited to be a part of that company and to serve people through coaching now.
You also have a podcast. Tell us a little bit about that before we jump in.
It's the Passion Project, Michelle. It's the thing that when I reached a certain level of scale in the business and you know things were going well there, I was like, what can I do to give back to the world? And the Eternal Optimist podcast is that. It's for people who are looking for hope and a you can do it too attitude. I interview who some would call famous people or successful people. And I ask them, what's the hardest thing you've been through? How'd you overcome it? And then now, what are you putting into the world? So I have interesting conversations with people. And if you check that out at any of the podcast platforms, we're now up to the top 1% podcast. It's been an amazing journey to be with that podcast for 1 year and 2 weeks now. We've been doing it. So it's an exciting place.
Yeah. It's so interesting. My entire coaching. So I am in year 11 because I started in January of 13 and started the podcast in 18. My entire trajectory for the podcast and for my coaching was because I had to sell a business, close a business, major health issues. My whole life got stopped and I had to go, how do I use what I have? If I can't use my physicality, because I was lifting and doing things, if I don't have my physical body, what do I do? How do I use what I have to rebuild something else, right? And so it's interesting. I can't wait to dig even deeper into your podcast. But if I had not had the challenges that I had in 2012, where I almost died, I would not have sold a business at the same time. I wouldn't have closed a business. And I certainly wouldn't have turned around and created all that I've been able to do in the last 10 years. And so, you know, I'm a firm believer that God uses everything from the beginning to the end. And now I own a second company that was started from what I did when I started my first 10 years out of college. So the same way that yours has moved, mine has done a lot of that moving and pivoting, but also coalescing. It's also come together, which is so interesting, right? So it's not a bunch of disparate paths. It's paths that I've journeyed that sounds like you have as well, where you learned something that you then used for the next thing that you did. And I think that's what's so beautiful about the journey of being a business owner, not just working, not that you couldn't do that in corporate working for someone, but when you own the journey yourself, right, as the owner of the company. I keep thinking of that road less traveled, right? Or what is it? The two roads diverged in a wooded path, and it's all about which choice you take. It's really interesting, especially since I've been an entrepreneur since 2000? Since 2000? That's a long time, a lot of winding roads. But I got to tell you, so you're saying you're 46, I'm almost 56. So I'm about 10 years ahead of you in age. But I'm telling you, I am living the dream of what I want to do, of being able to support, right? When you're like, you know, like I'm coaching people, I'm loving on people, I'm supporting them, I'm empowering them. And my kids laugh. My husband talks about retiring and my sons say all the time, Dad's going to retire. Mom's never going to retire. Mom's never going to retire. And it's not that he wants to retire. I think he's just looking for something else to do. And I love what I do, right? But what's so cool is the people listening to my podcast, they love what they do. Because most of us wouldn't build a business we hate. Like, that makes no sense.
Yeah. And how many people are stuck in a place that they feel like they can't get out of because they made choices to get them there. And now they're like, well, I can't get out of it. Well, actually, there is a way out. And by listening to this conversation, you might actually uncover a couple clues because you've dropped some nuggets here. You started this part of our dialogue with how might I or how would I do this with this health challenge? So you took what many would be the biggest obstacle of their life and it would just completely shut them down and they'd be the victim of it. And you took it, you played offense. How might I shift things around? How might I do it this way? And look what's happened. Your greatest challenge has become the thing that lifted you to where we are now. And that is, in my mind, what eternal optimism is being able to take the hard challenge and learn from it and use it to uplift and to teach and to inspire others and to inspire yourself, which you've just done with me. I love that you did that and that you're living proof that, yeah, hard stuff happens and you can use it to your advantage and help the world with it. So thank you. That was awesome.
Yeah, you're welcome. There's a great book you've probably read, it, Failing Forward by John Maxwell. Love that book. And he has three questions that he asks all the time. And I challenge my clients with it as well, because I've seen it to be very helpful for myself. And that is, what went really well? What didn't go so well? And I would change, add, or delete. And what did I learn? And so just the framing of those three questions, right? What worked well? Awesome. Celebrate it. Move forward with it. What wasn't so cool or what needed to be tweaked? Okay. And what did I learn? I think sometimes we're so used to learning by only getting it right. And a lot of learning comes from failure. The older I get, the more I'm embracing failure as a learning tool, right? And I say that because there are people, based on our conversation today, who may feel like failures because they don't know their numbers or they don't understand their financials. They don't understand how to scale. They're afraid to take themselves out of the day-to-day activities. They're afraid to give up control. And some things aren't going to work right 100% of the time. Actually, most things aren't. And so it's building a tolerance, right? That window of tolerance that allows you to say, I'm okay with some amount of failure, because perfectionist, that didn't get you anywhere. We just want to keep moving forward, right? So tell us how you use all of that in your coaching and in what you do to help people.
Well, I want to say, I love some of the framework you've laid out here. You're coaching people and you're loving on people. I view it the same way. I love what I do. I don't think retirement is in the equation because I love it. It's so different than the corporate grind that I used to have. So if anyone out there is listening and they're in between or they're building the side hustle, I'll just say that, yes, you can do it. And there's a couple of, I would say, basic, simple, not necessarily easy, as I'll share with my story of how I messed up simple, but there are some basic, simple principles around financial literacy and building the business that I don't think are common knowledge or common practice that I want to share. And I'd like to share this openly and transparently because there are probably people out there like me for many years who felt ashamed and I didn't want to talk about financial literacy. In fact, I used to think that I could outsell or out-earn everything. My problems with finance or not understanding what's a P&L statement. You know what? My revenue goes up every year by 20 or 40%, so I'm going to be fine. That used to be the mindset. And what did that get me? Very transparently, here's what it got me, friends. It got me into a place where I didn't know much about taxes, how to save for taxes, how to pay taxes. And at the end of my first multiple millions that I'd made, I had not saved for taxes. I did not pay taxes. And I had to go write a huge check to the government that really set me back a lot. And it was a source of much stress. And this was a private thing. Only a couple of people knew about it. And I felt really ashamed and guilty about this. Okay, so fast forward to coaching high performance people. I've come to find that the significant portion of high performers who run companies, they don't have this down either. So if you're out there and you're feeling like exposed or feeling guilt or shame that there's this challenge of understanding finance or understanding financial literacy, yeah, a lot of people have that. And I'm one of them. And I'd say that there's a couple of things that I've done since then that helped to relieve that shame or that guilt. And now we're in a place where all of that is sound and we're profiting. And it is a choice now, where before it was outsell everything. Now we can look at a P&L with a little bit of confidence because we've been taught, we've learned. Here's how it started. For me, it started in 2018 when one of my coaching clients said to me that here's a question that guides him. And here's a place that if you're not driving, maybe jot it down. The question is, what am I going to do today that my future self will thank me for? What am I going to do today that my future self will thank me for? And for me, it was, this is on Halloween, 2018, solve my tax issue, solve my financial literacy issue. This is not that long ago. I'm running a multiple seven figure business, and I don't understand these things, right? And I'm coaching people at a high level, not on financial literacy, by the way, a number of years ago. I can talk about it now and coach to it now because I understand it now. But then I didn't. So then, this is long after I'd solved the tax thing and paid it off, I still didn't have a system for understanding and reading my profit loss statements, understanding that. So I committed to 30 minutes a day where I sat down and I got all my taxes, all the stuff that I've been paying, the late fees and all of the, you know, let's just go ahead and submit something that's going to cause me to have to pay 6 months later at multiple penalties and interest. I started to get all that ahead of schedule. And when tax time came, I wasn't scrambling on the 10th of April that weekend to take 8 hours over the weekend to get it all in just to file an extension. No, we were ahead of it. And I got that meeting out in February 2019, right before COVID happened, right? And since then, we've always paid on time and no more extensions. In addition to that, I was able to get some help in a place that, again, shame and a little embarrassed to share this back then. I didn't use the QuickBooks. I used a spreadsheet for everything. I didn't know how to track these things. I just kept a bunch of receipts in a box. And now I don't do QuickBooks myself. I have a professional do it for me. They sit down with me and they show me how to reconcile things. And these simple, not easy necessarily, but these simple practices of learning how to face the challenge and get ahead on taxes and face the challenge and hire a professional, a fractional CFO, or your CPA to monitor and help you with your QuickBooks. Those are things now that are second nature, but they weren't second nature as little as 6 years ago, 5 years ago, right?
You probably wouldn't even think to go back, would you? To not have those things.
Whoa, no way. No way.
Right, no way. It's interesting. Our journeys are similar in some ways. So my first 10 years, Matt, I worked for Dun & Bradstreet Software and built financial application software. And yeah, built project accounting, accounts payable, and did all that. Well, when I came home to raise my children, who were 2 and 4 at the time, they were 1 and 3 at the time, I decided to start my own company. But I didn't take those big business principles and bring them down into, let's say, a micro business, right? I just started doing, like you were doing, I started doing the work of the company, not the building of the framework of the company. And so, you know, it's one of those things, if I'm pricing something incorrectly, I can't outpace myself with sales. I can't sell more. If I'm already losing money on everything I'm selling, selling more is not going to help me. It's just going to dig the hole deeper. And so I got hit with, oh my gosh, I'm trying to start this business. I took 6 figures out of our home 30 years ago so that I could come home. I'm going to start this business. And it's already costing me money. And so as I've been teaching the same way, I literally was taking money that my husband earned in corporate because he was helping put money into the company so that I could work for rich people doing interiors so that I could lose money after not having time with my kids. Sounds like a beautiful business that anybody /nobody would ever want to build. And so I started realizing at that point, I either am going to make this work or I'm going to go back to corporate. We're going to find another way. And I had to sit back and say, what is everything that I know? And am I doing it? Am I a hobby? Is it a jobby? What am I doing? Right. So I made those changes. And then we got hit, same as you, with the tax bill, because I didn't think all the way through taxes of a self-employed person. I'd always been had my taxes covered from corporate, right, where they just took it out for you. And so all of a sudden we get hit with this big tax. We've had a great successful year, but we get a big tax bill. Well, I sat back and thought, all right, how are we going to fix that one? Same thing, paid the tax bill, worked my way through. I am a numbers person. I am not a salesperson. I'm a numbers person. So then started learning it, started talking and sharing it. So all the way back in 2007, I started teaching in the interior design industry, how to read a P&L, how to read a balance sheet, how to price independent work, what pricing, the strategy and the structure of a pricing model, not a commodity, right? But very boutique idea-driven type pricing that we would use in interiors. Different way of pricing than I'm going to price a cup, right? Different thing. We're not just, it's just not as straightforward. It's idea-based. And then I started teaching, I have three signature programs that I teach, and it's about pricing, understanding your financials. And then I became Profit First certified. How do we make sure that these things don't happen? But like you, a lot of that training and a lot of that education and a lot of that coaching came from doing it wrong personally, from getting it wrong and being willing to go, hello. And I don't know if you've seen this, Matt, but you're a guy telling us that you had these challenges. I would tell you that there's even more shame sometimes for women around some of these things perceived. I don't know that it's truly more, but there's this perception that by and large, I would say over the last 50 years, women have not been taught at the same rate as men how to manage money. Because, you know, women weren't even able to get a bank account until like mid-1970s without their husband signing for them. So financial literacy numbers, it was not something that a lot of women of my generation ever knew much about. And we've had to really dig in to learn and understand. We were always taught that that's kind of what the guy did. So now you've got a bunch of women who are in companies that are making multiple millions of dollars, and they don't even have the background because they've just never been taught that. So there's really a disconnect. It's getting better. It's a lot better now than it was. And the conversation that you're bringing to the table today, as I would say, a conversation that I've seen more and more business owners be willing to have. Like, I didn't get that, or I messed that up, and here's how I solved it. So interesting to hear you, because we're used to hearing women have this conversation and share this blind spot, if you will, when they built their business. So I really appreciate you sharing the same blind spot.
You're certainly welcome, Michelle. And I'd say that it's generally, I'd say that across the board, men and women, and maybe at a higher percentage for women, maybe so, that this is definitely a blind spot. It's definitely a source of pain. And when you get into an individual, I'd say one-on-one coaching relationship, or when someone comes to you, trusts you, you don't have to actually open up and talk about this. Yeah, this is a great source of discomfort and you know, hidden guilt or hidden shame. So if someone listening today has this, and they've been listening to your show for some time, and they know that this is a subject they can come to you with, or that if they're building up their courage to finally let it out, how might they start? Here's how I might start, or how I might invite them to start. First, I might invite them to reach out to you and have a conversation with you and hire you as the coach, because this is your specialty. If they are still undecided on that and they want a little bit more at home on the bench, just give me something else I might be able to take in. The first resource that I learned, and it was from a client of mine who gave this resource to me, that was a simple book. You know, it was by Greg Crabtree. It's called Simple Numbers, Straight Talk, Big Profit. And these are some simple concepts that if you take these in here and you look at where you might be spending your money in your business, the percentage that you're spending on, let's just say, your overhead for employee costs, what you're spending to attract and retain talent, what your marketing is, what your profit actually is at the end, your net profit, your gross profit, everything that is these terms that might be confusing or intimidating. I found this to be a simple place to dive in, right?
It's a great book. I have it on my bookshelf over there. It's a great book.
Yeah, I think this is the book where I find a client who has this challenge. And many of them, when they do have it, they open up and share it. This is the place I take them first, is over to here. And then I actually take them to my QuickBooks and show them, you know, here's how it's worked for me. And to see the light bulbs go on and to see people that this has been a deep, dark, hidden secret start to open up and talk about it. That's the point. That's the purpose. That's why we're talking right now, is that I want to let people know that this is not a scarlet letter on the chest, and it may feel like that. This is a place where there are people like Michelle, there are people like this book, Greg Crabtree.
Yeah.
There are places you can go to learn about this. And I just want my story to be a testimony for others that it may feel like a dark place, it may be a stressor. You can get over that. You can make it through one step at a time. And I might invite the audience to ask this question: what is the simplest, soonest action that you might take on your path to financial literacy, because they can feel like a giant pyramid that you're trying to build in one day. It doesn't have to be. Just one simple, soon action you can take. And you're in the presence of friends right now, dear listener. So please reach out to Michelle or message me and be happy to, you know, listen and help you on that journey.
You know, it's so interesting, Matt, that financial literacy, it's its own language. And that's what I really try to encourage people with. And I think that you've done so well there. And that is, you're not going to get it all at one time. Some of these, there are concepts that build upon each other, right? That's why we talk about, I made a comment, I was speaking at the International Window Covering Expo a couple of weeks ago. And I made the comment, I said, you know, I can remember when my husband said to me one time, he asked me a question and he was like, how much profit are you making on that? And at the time, this was early on. This was probably, I don't know, probably 2003, 2002. And I was like, I don't know. I felt shame, right? Same kind of thing. But I also felt like, why don't I know? Like, I should know that. So his whole thing was, are you making enough money? Is it worth it? Are you making the money? Long story short, after I dug in and figured out how I was going to, if I was going to do this and take time away from my family, I was going to make money at it. Like, that's just going to be the bottom line.
Love it. Yeah.
And so then I can remember when the conversation changed and he said to me, I told him I was doing some job and he was like, what is your profit? And I said, I don't know how to answer you. And he was like, what do you mean you don't know how to answer me? Do you not know what I mean by profit? I said, well, that's a very vague term. I don't know if you're asking me about gross profit or net profit before taxes, after taxes, before I've invested in my 401k, like where exactly, which profit, at which point do you want to know? And he said, I think you got it. And I was like, okay. Because I knew, right? Not all profit is the same. Gross profit is very different than net profit. Net profit's different than before taxes and after taxes, before investments, before debt repayment, before inventory, after inventory. Like, there's so many ways to look at it. So if you're going to ask me the question, ask it specifically, and then I'll answer it. And he was like, all right, I got you. I'm out. Like, I don't have to worry about it anymore. But it's a muscle that we have to keep using. It's a language and it's a muscle, and it strengthens the more that we talk about it, the more we dive into it, the more that we want to learn, right? So there's the basic understanding of a profit and loss or a balance sheet. And then there's the more detailed, deep dive into how do I analyze it and make it work? You mentioned a fractional CFO. I'm not sure if you even know this, Matt, but I launched another company last fall, and it's an online financial dashboard called Matrix Solutions. And it's built for small business owners to have a visual look at their financials. So we load QuickBooks data and we show it to you. We show it with your profit first percentages. We allow you to do financial modeling, to look at billable capacity. And when you pull up your dashboard, it shows it to you in a visual way that a business owner can use, not your accountants and not your financial planners. But it was another tool out of my journey of building spreadsheets for all of my clients to understand what they were doing, to say, there is a tool here and you have the ability to understand it. Maybe you don't need to see it in black and white on a P&L. Maybe you need to see it in a pie chart or in a thermometer chart. And maybe you need to have it pulled out so that you know where to focus, because time is money and you don't have hours to sit and do a calculation with your calculator or your phone. What if we just did the calculations for you? What if you just set a KPI and we show you where you are? And all you have to do is load your data and you're done. You're out, tapping out, look at it, make a decision, move. And so it's time and effort to build the strength of that financial literacy.
I agree. And Matrix Solutions, I believe, is that what you just said? The name of?
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. And I feel, and I've not seen it yet, but I know without even thinking about it, that is something that every person, and I've been talking, my angle so far has been from the front end of this, overcoming this gap. You know, so I'd like to fast forward now that I'm about 5.5 years into understanding and reading these statements. Now I'd like to fast forward to the other end of that once you do have an understanding, because I know you have some listeners that have a sophistication around this. I've been talking to those that are overcoming the fear that I overcame. So if we move forward, you know, whether you are brand new and trying to overcome this challenge for the first time, I am certain that Matrique Solutions is a great place to start. Now, once you've actually gotten your GED or high school diploma in this stuff, now what happens is you're getting your master's and your PhD, right? Well, so this is what I might share with that. Because right now I have an equation I look at and I don't really have a name for it, but let's just say it's desirable profit. You know, good or bad, let's just say desirable profit. Now that our business is scaled, the place that we're at now is looking not just at the money and time. I like to look at a couple different factors in what I would call my version of financial literacy with clients, right? And I run a coaching practice, you know, where I do a lot of one-on-one coaching, public speaking, and some group facilitation. So I look at the different types of engagements and I'm asking myself, A, you know, the money, how much are they paying? You know, B, I'm asking the time, how much time is it with them? How much time is it planning? How much time is it developing my associate coaches to work with them, right? I ask myself, C, how much emotional energy am I expending on these particular client engagements? Because there are clients that pay a lot, that suck a lot of life out of you. There are things in your business you don't want to do, right? And then there are those that may not pay as much and you love it and it's just free flying and free flowing. So emotional energy expended is a category for me. And then the last one comes back to the referrals. Is this someone that is a raving client fan that's offering us testimonials and referrals by the bundle? You know, and when I look at all those things together, that's how I start to figure out my own equation of profit when it comes to clients. Because one thing that really rings true in what you're saying is that I don't want to trade time for money, because the time with the kids is, it's important time right now. My kids are 8, 6, and 4. So I don't want to just trade time for money. And I'm not judging anyone that is. Oh, I wish everyone the best without any judgment. And for me, I don't want to do that anymore because I've done that for a long time. So now truly looking at every client and asking, you know, where is the trade-off here, right? Can I do this for someone and take 90 minutes a month as opposed to 90 minutes a week, right? And can I help them solve their challenge in less time so that I might have more time with the family, right? Might I delegate this to someone else, right? So these are some of the questions that come up to me when I'm thinking about what's the desirable kind of profit. Not every dollar is the same to me. The ones that give me the most emotional energy and that give me life, the ones that empower me to go back and spend time with the family, those are the dollars and the profits I'm looking for. Did that connect? Did that resonate?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's even the same conversation that a lot of our listeners are having, right? Because they're looking at, especially in the interior design world, there are some that are working with, like, it takes time to design an entire home. Some of these are two-year projects, but then they may have a small project where they go in for 2 hours and just share information, right? Or answer some burning questions that somebody might have. There's a spectrum of time that they're spending on these projects. And honestly, there's the emotional part is so important, because there are clients out there that, I mean, they literally drain you. They drain you.
Yes. Yeah.
And I know that even in my interview process, one of the things we talk about on the podcast too, Matt, is profit is about more than money. You just like hit the nail on the head. My whole theory behind the podcast is profitability is about more than money. It's profitability of communication, the profitability of time, of energy, of the whole thing, right? I use the Bible verse a lot of times. It's the one that says, what does it profit a man to gain the world and lose his soul? So it does me no good to have all these millions of dollars or hundreds of thousands or whatever the number may be if I am miserable on the other side of it. And so figuring out at any season of life or season of business, where do you want to expend that energy? Where do you want to put that time? What is the best use of your resources at this moment? That's the way that I like to look at profitability, which is exactly, I think, what you just described. And so I know a lot of our listeners are asking all the time, how do I communicate clearly and effectively? Because that's profitable. How do I make sure my contracts are written beautifully, but also tight? That's profitable, right? How do I make sure that I'm hiring the right people? Because that's profitable.
Yes. Yes.
Right? The cost of a bad employee, but the cost of a bad contract, the cost of bad communication, the cost of spending our energy in the wrong place and being exhausted. And then what happens from that? The cost of being the bottleneck, as you started with, like the cost of not having a raving fan, the cost of how they're going to speak about us on social media. All of those things affect profitability, whether it's for the brand, for the human, the person, right? Or the business. And so you absolutely connected and hit the nail on the head. I think it's important for all of us to think about who is our best client. It's interesting too. I'll say this. I've had some of my clients, Matt, they thought that their best client was the wealthiest of the clients, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. All the time that happens. Yep.
Just because they would have the money, right? Because we think that they're the ones that are going to have money to spend on all the things. And sometimes they are the most difficult people, not all of them, right? No blanket statements here. But I have seen that sometimes the expectations are high. They expect to be given a lot of things. They expect for things to be cut. It's not the ideal that the business owner thought they were stepping into. Sometimes taking it down a step or two, kind of paralleling what you described, somebody who maybe they're not paying as much, but they are a joy to work with and it is fun and it's life-giving. I would work with that all day long over the higher level where it felt like I was being drained, right? And that's what I see people recognizing.
Yeah, that really connects with me because I remember my first big client, a famous client, a professional athlete client, houses in the Hamptons. I'm thinking, I'm in. I've got this rich client that's got all this money, and now I'm going to be in these circles getting connected up here. And that was the hardest person I have ever had to work with, who was constantly angry and yelling and skipping calls and blaming and all kinds of stuff was happening. And that was incredibly challenging. And I did it because in the beginning of coaching, I needed to have clients. And it sounded pretty sexy to have a client that's paying what they're paying and all this opportunity and great lessons learned from that. It's not the size of the bank account necessarily that matters most. Now that when you've achieved a certain level of scale or success, or you have the ability to choose a little bit more who you work with, who is that ideal client that you might work with? Who is the ideal prospect or client that brings in the type of profit that serves where you're going next in your career? You mentioned interior design. That brings up in my mind, if it takes a couple of years to design the interior, I coach some high-level organizations in the construction industry, and I know that some of them, they take a fee for the work. They take a beating at HOA meetings, at civic planning meetings. They just take so much, and it's not very profitable, some of these deals. And I continue to ask the clients, why do you do this? Well, here's the gist of it, is that we learn how to go and start a business. We learn what makes us money. And if we get into a comfortable place, it can be very challenging to break that habit. It can be challenging to break the habit of, I figured out a way to get clients. Yeah, they may not be as profitable financially, but at least I have the work. So I continue to do that. That's a hard habit or a mindset to break for many people. All right. So I want to honor the people out there who might be listening and thinking that, yeah, it's not just about understanding where the profit is and what the terms are, right? If you've advanced past that, now it's not just about making money. It might be about turning some of those hard habits and the things that have led us to here. It might be breaking some of those mental habits and starting to see what you're describing right now of there is the right kind or the enjoyable, life-giving, light-bringing type of client that you might be able to work with. All right, so I think it all, at different stages and different levels, this literacy of profit, it certainly has many different avenues to explore. And I'm glad you're here to share this because this is helpful stuff, what you're talking about.
Question for you. So here's something I do. I'm curious to see if you do a similar exercise. Every year, I sit down and not only review my clients who I'd like to work with again or continue working with, not just them by name, but like, what is it that I'm solving for them, right? How is it that I'm engaging with them? But I also stop every year and ask myself, how do I want to show up this year, right? How do I want to take my brilliance or what I know? How do I want to distribute that into the world? Where do I want to focus my energies? And there are times that I have offerings that I take off my plate that I'm like, I'm not going to do that anymore. That no longer feels like it's good for me. Could I do it? Yes. Is it the best use of my energy and time? No. And so then I choose not to do that anymore. It's just something that comes off my menu of services, right? I know my clients and those that are listening, they do the same thing. Like, we no longer offer that, or we don't work that way anymore. Have you found that you do the same thing, Matt, when you're talking about this overarching kind of conversation around profitability? It's profitable for you as a person?
I'd say two things come to mind, Michelle. One is, I remember there was a time in my first year in coaching in 2014 when I was offered the chance to coach someone who was a financial advisor in their first year, and their father owned the practice. It has done really well. He could afford it. He paid me to coach his son. That felt like the world to me, to have a $500 a month client that I could coach and help them grow and develop their sales ability. Loved it in year one, 2014. In 2023, there's no way I would take on a brand new first year sales professional. You know, the people that I coach now are people that are selling enterprise level, people that are selling deals that are in the, not the hundreds of dollars or the thousands, but in the 50s and the hundreds of thousands and in the millions and tens of millions. There's a different level of player that I coach now. And before, it was throw everything at the wall and take any clients that we can. And now the profitable choice is for me to coach people or at this skill level, they want to take it to the next place. Not everyone that will accept my offer, right? So yes, is the answer, is that some of the offerings from 2014, we don't have those anymore for sure, right? The annual thing that I would do every year, and I do it the week of my wife's birthday, which is the week before Thanksgiving, I sit down, I like to look at every client and I look at how many calls and how much time did we actually invest this year, right? And I ask myself on a 1 through 10 scale, no sevens, because 7 is a BS answer, my friends. Okay. So on a 1 through 10 scale, I'll ask, to what level of energy does this person give? And the 8s, 9s, and 10s, I love it. I want to replicate those people, keep working with them. And if the energy after working with them for the first year, or my longest standing client right now, we're in year number 8. If I look at client and we're in year 8 and the energy level is starting to go down, then it's time to promote that client to excellence elsewhere, or to change our agreement, or to have that conversation around it. So yes, there is a tiering that I'd redo every year to look at the time, the money, the energy expended. And is this, again, is this the person that's offering me referrals to more ideal clients? So yeah, I do look at that. And I'm glad you brought it up, because sometimes if you have the person that's paying the most and you get a lot of energy from them and they're taking far more time than you would think, it might creep up on you too. Like, if 15% of your annual revenue is coming from one client and you're spending 50% of your time and they fill your bucket, you may be getting hypnotized and they may be pulling the wool over your eyes unintentionally, and you're spending a lot of time with it. And that's not a profitable client, even though it feels like it. So yeah, I like to keep some of those facts and feels in there, and they balance each other as to what the ideal client mix is and what the ideal services are moving forward.
Yeah, I love that. We talk a lot about comparing empirical data with the gut feeling. You can't get rid of either one, right? The logic and the feeling, you've got to look at both. And I would say that you're a business coach, I'm a business coach, we both do that. But other business types can do it the same. Like my clients, your clients, we probably encourage them both to do the same thing in the industries that they represent. What do you love to do? Where is your team perfectly poised and skilled at this moment to serve your ideal client? Like, because if not, that's draining. Where do we need to fill in the gap with education? Where do we need to fill in the gaps other places? Sometimes I know there's energy I want to expend, but I don't have it. So I'm looking for where can I pull it from in other places so that I can put the energy towards what is most important for me in that particular season of life and business.
Yes, I think this is an important distinction to make, because you just triggered a thought in my mind, Michelle, around the client. They're an annual 7-figure earning client who happens to be the bottleneck. And they're so good at selling and so good at leading people, and they're not great at being able to let go of things. If any of your listeners are out there in that boat where they want to kind of keep their eyes on everything, control everything, and they are the bottleneck, you know, and they'll know who I'm talking to if they're feeling that right now. If you ever feel that way, one of the things that I've seen to be hard to break, and it is breakable and changeable, is being able to let go, being able to automate and delegate things. So if that is a challenge that any one of your listeners is having, then I'd invite you to please reach out to Michelle or please reach out to me, because that is one of the biggest challenges that I see in recovering perfectionists and highly functioning workaholics, is they don't know how to let go. They don't know how to delegate effectively. You know, and if you truly want to scale it and literally double your business, you know, there's a way to do that. Just figure out the right question to ask and how you might get out of the way and let your people do it. So I think that might be the thought I would close with there on that subject.
Yeah, I love that. And for those that are listening, there is a podcast, we'll link it in the show notes, that I put out, Delegate, Don't Dump. And we'll talk the difference of delegation and dumping, right? So that you're delegating with success, exactly what Matt has just mentioned. So Matt, tell us where everybody can find you. This has been such a fun conversation, and I know everybody, including myself, are going to want to follow up and listen to more and get to know more about what you have to offer and what you're putting out to the world. So where can we find that?
Thank you, Michelle. The first place would be eternaloptimistpodcast.com. That's my podcast website. I'd love to invite anyone here to come and listen to our show. If you want to connect with me live or in person, then you can find my name, Matt Drinkon. There's only 12 Drinkons in the world. I'm related to all of them. I'm the only Matt. So, you know, find me and, you know, LinkedIn or Facebook and connect with me there. But I would invite your listeners to come to Facebook or Instagram at Eternal Optimist Podcast. I've got a page and an account there. And every morning, Monday through Friday at 7 a.m. Eastern time, I do a live stream for 10 to 20 minutes every morning. And I coach and work on how to change whatever inside might be holding us back and turn it into that inner peace and happiness. In addition to that, you know, we work on some business coaching and some skill development as well. But I'd love to have people come and follow me there and connect. Coming up in later this summer, I've got a masterclass on sales that we're launching, a new mastermind. So we'll tease people with more of that as time comes on. But thank you for the opportunity to connect with your audience today, Michelle. And just, it's been a real pleasure. So I appreciate you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I enjoyed it. It's always fun to talk to somebody who cares about a lot of the same things that care about and that you care about. So it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much. Thank you, Matt, so much for the podcast today. Thank you for sharing. I'm glad that there's no more shame in our game of not understanding our financials, because now we've got that under control. I want to encourage all of you that are listening to check out the Eternal Optimist podcast, and then certainly Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram, join up with Matt and hear what he has to say, listen to his coaching moments. If you are looking for information on scaling your design business, please reach out and let us know here at Scarlet Thread Consulting. We would love to have a discovery call with you. You can go to the Work With Me page at scarletthreadconsulting.com. And remember, from everything that we have shared with you today, profitability is not an accident. Profit happens intentionally. So make it your intention to be profitable.
Profit is a Choice is proud to be part of the designnetwork.org, where you can discover more design media reaching creative listeners. Thanks for listening, and stay creative and business minded.